Luke chapter 23. If you come across the website Friends Reunited, www.friendsreunited.co.uk. It's if you don't know it, it's a website that's been put together to put us in touch with long lost school friends. It's great fun. I thought I'd see if I could reunite myself with some of those friends that I'd forgotten all about. It's particularly good fun when you begin to discover what other people are doing. I thought it'd be tremendous for people to discover what I'm doing. Just think about all the people that you were at school with. Who were the last people that you ever thought would have become a clergyman? Well, I reckon when I get in touch with people, in my mind, it was safe money on me not becoming a vicar. So I thought that would be a great thing to do. Well, I've discovered a few things. None are going to be particularly enthralling to you, where people live. Some of them haven't moved from my hometown in Letchworth. Others are living in Canada and Australia, all over the world. I've discovered what they're doing. Teachers, somebody's in insurance, an estate agent, civil servants, and so on. And nothing that I would have bothered to tell you about this morning until I came across one name. I read this one name of this boy from school, and as I read his name, I shuddered. I'm going to change his name, and that will become obvious as I read on, because I don't want to be taken to court. But I'll call him Dean. And as I read Dean Pearson, which is not his name, but as I read that, boy, I was terrified. He was the most terrifying boy in the school, and probably the most terrifying school boy in the whole of Hertfordshire. He had the most terrible temper. He would fly off the handle at the slightest thing. Everybody was his friend, and you didn't want to get in the wrong side of Dean. He was terrifying. His strength, when he got lost his temper, was frightening. I saw him put his fist through a blackboard. A blackboard. I don't know how he did it. I saw him smash a sturdy table tennis table to bits with his bare hands. I went to a great school. It's amazing I became anything decent, wasn't it? Dean was expelled for throwing a teacher twice his size and I think twice his weight down a flight of stairs. That's how strong he became. Dean was a complete psychopath. But I'm telling you all this because it was so fascinating to discover what his job is now. I mean, what would you reckon? Someone with that temper, with that background, what would you put him as? A debt collector? A demolition expert? Something like that? You know, somebody who likes inflicting pain on others? A dentist? Well, I don't know. What would you put him down? Do you know what he is now? He's an accountant. A respectable accountant. Probably wears a suit. If only they knew about Dean. Maybe they do. Maybe that's why he's got the job. They don't sack him. I don't know. Well, this week I received an email from, not from him, I didn't get in touch, I'm still terrified of him, but an email from one of my old school friends, Carol. I've only got to know her in these last few months through Friends Reunited. I've told her that I'm a clergyman, she's still talking to me, that's terrific. And she said to me, well, actually, I had discovered that you were a clergyman somehow. She tells me how she's not really thought about religion until recently, and wonders how I ended up as a vicar. Well, that's a conversation that we're going to keep going, I'm sure. And then she wrote of other school friends that she's in touch with and those she'd like to get in touch with, wonders who I'm in touch with. And then she wrote this. My good friend, her best friend at school, my good friend Susanna Robinson sadly died of leukemia. So that's it. I don't know when she died, but Susanna Robinson didn't make 40. Here we are, you see, in the middle of an email, catching up on news of old friends of school days, a happy email, and bang! Death has to rear its ugly head and ruin everything. And that's what death always does. It's an intruder. It's an uninvited guest. It gatecrashes life and ruins the party. Well, many of you will know that. Maybe recently. It's agony when death hits us. It severs loving relationships. That's why the words of Jesus at the end of our reading today are so very, very appealing. Do you see them there right at the end? Verse 43 of Luke chapter 23. Jesus is speaking to a man only hours away from death, and Jesus said to him, Luke 23, verse 43, I tell you the truth, today you will be with me in paradise. Today, says Jesus, after you and I are dead, he says to this man, we will be together in paradise. What a promise. See, knowing that promise for ourselves changes everything. Oh, death is always hard. There are no easy answers to coping with it. But knowing this takes the sting out of death. If we know for certain that after death, paradise... I'll never forget it. It was 14 years ago now. I received a telephone call from my mum on what I thought was just a normal evening. She said this: "I'm at Lister Hospital in Stevenage. Your dad's had a heart attack." Well, I don't remember anything else, she said. I don't remember many of the other events of that evening. I do remember jumping in my car and driving as fast as I can down the A1, quite a few miles over the speed limit, longing to get to my dad's bedside. Praying, literally praying that he'd still be alive when I got there. I didn't know what state he was in. But all the while, as I was bombing down the A1, all the while I was so thankful that just months before, my dad had understood this promise for himself. This promise that Jesus gave to this thief on the cross: after you die, you'll be with me in paradise. And so while I longed to see my dad again and to have many more years with him, I knew that if he died, he would go to be in paradise with Jesus Christ. It's a promise that changes everything. Knowing this promise makes facing death easier. Not easy, as we heard from Liz earlier in her very honest account of her own situation. Not easy, but easier. Well, here's a promise I'd love Carol, my old schoolmate from Friends Reunited. It's a promise I'd love Carol to know. It's a promise I'd have loved Susanna to know, Carol's school friend who died of leukemia. And it's a promise that everyone should know, that everyone should understand, that everyone should own for themselves. Transforms life. Makes a difference in death. See, here's the big question as we look at these words of Jesus this morning. Do you have an answer when death comes? When death comes to your friends, to your family, and when it finally catches up with you, do you have an answer? You see, Jesus Christ does. Jesus said these words on the day that he himself died. He'd been nailed to a cross to die. Either side of him were two criminals in exactly the same situation. We read about it there in verse 32. Let me read again. Verse 32, two other men, both criminals, were also led out with Jesus to be executed. When they came to the place called the Skull, there they crucified him along with the criminals, one on his right, the other on his left. The scene is easy to picture. Jesus and two criminals being executed, Jesus in the middle, the two criminals either side of him. A crowd had gathered to watch the gruesome event. We read about that in verse 35. And we also see in verse 35 that some of them sneered at Jesus, mocking him. Well, that's easy to do. They knew Jesus and the two criminals were only hours away from death. It's easy to sneer at somebody then, isn't it? They knew their death was absolutely certain. Just as people don't get up from an electric chair today, no one got down from a cross 2,000 years ago alive. These criminals knew they were going to die. And so they had time to prepare for it. That was the one benefit they had. Golly, I don't want to suggest for 1 minute that this was a good thing for them, but they had time to prepare for their death. Not long, but they had time. Of course, most of us are not only hours away from death. We may be, but most of us presumably are not. But we are all going to die. As George Bernard Shaw famously put it, it's the ultimate statistic, one in one die. Although it does seem that the Sun Life Assurance think differently, they sent me this offer of a policy. "Dear Mr. Williams, have you ever stopped to think who would look after your family if anything happened to you?" That's how they start their letter. And they offer me this policy called the Money Black Back Plan. It says this: 15 years of real protection for those you love, and then a worthwhile cash sum. Sounds good, doesn't it? And then I got to the bottom of it. You see, this is their offer to me. It's very, very suspicious. They say, cash if you die, cash if you don't. No, they're not. I'm no fool. I went to a good school. No. They're not kidding me. I know I'm going to die. Well, that's why these words of Jesus are so appealing. I know I'm going to die. And so that's why these words of Jesus are so relevant to every one of us. Paradise with him after death. It's a wonderful promise. But to know it, I've got to face the fact that I will die. That's why hearing of the death of an old school friend is so striking. In our school days, we thought we were indestructible. We thought we'd live forever. Well, and not only in our school days. Most of the time, we live as if it's never going to happen to me. Well, I've been doing a lot of walking down memory lane this week. I dug up my old college photograph from 1991 when I was at Theological College, or as a good friend of mine calls it, Vicar Factory. Here it is. I like this photo from 1991. I look 10 years younger. I like this photo, but it does tell some sad stories as I look at it. Just over in the corner here, here's Doug. He died of a heart attack just a couple of years after this was taken. And then in the middle, there's Jeffrey. He died in a tragic shooting accident. He was shooting in the country. Gun went off and killed him. And then further up in the middle is Frank. He died in very suspicious circumstances in a car accident. And then over here is Derek. His wife had a brain tumour. In the picture, we're all smiling. Every one of us. Ask any one of us where we'd be in the year 2002, and, well, I would guess we'd have all spoken of goals that we would have hoped to have achieved by then and plans that we still were hoping for in the future. But I guess none of us would have entertained the thought that we wouldn't be alive today, January 2002. Well, I am. But I could equally have been one of the statistics. I will be, one day. We've got to face up to it. You see, like those who were crucified with Jesus, we have time to prepare for death, but we have to face it. And of course, we don't have forever. Will you this morning face the fact that you are going to die, sooner or later? I have 18-month-old twin daughters, Bethan and Susanna. They're great fun. I love playing with them. They love playing peekaboo. Both of them love playing peekaboo, but especially Bethan. She loves it to bits. She loves playing peekaboo, but she has her own little way of playing this particular game. She doesn't hide. She stands in the middle of the room with her hands covering her eyes and her eyes closed. And she thinks, you see, that when she has her hands over her eyes, that I can't see her. And so I say, "Where's Bethan? Where's Bethan?" And every time I say, "Where's Bethan?" she giggles. And the more I say it, she laughs all the more, tittering away. And then eventually, when she can stand it no longer, and actually when I can stand it no longer as well, eventually she takes her hands away from her eyes and we both say to each other, "Boo! Peek-a-boo!" It's great fun. Now you see, Bethan thinks that when she covers her eyes, I can't see her. Because she can't see me, she thinks I can't see her. It's silly, isn't it? But she's only 18 months old. But that's how we treat death. We play peekaboo with death. Oh, we don't think about it, hoping that death won't think about us. But it doesn't matter whether we've got our eyes closed to it or not. Death can see us. And there comes a time when it taps us on the shoulder with a very loud and frightening boo. That's what happened to these men that day that they were crucified next to Jesus Christ. They had to face then, if they'd never faced it before, the fact that death was a reality. And for them, it came sooner rather than later. These men didn't die quietly with their feet up in front of the fire, watching the telly, having had a good innings. See, death doesn't respect age. Well, we just have to look in our newspapers from the last few days to know that. Here's the front page of the Telegraph from Tuesday. Terrible, sad story of little Jennifer Jane Brown, daughter of the Chancellor, Gordon Brown, and his wife, Sarah. Our hearts go out to them. How we wish them the peace of Jesus Christ in such a tragic time. Here's the Mirror from January the 5th, page 15. The tragic story of the daughter of Vidal Sassoon, the British hairdresser, Katia Sassoon. She died at a New Year's Eve party, aged just 33. Let me read what it says here. Paramedics were called to the home of actress and model Katia Sassoon hours after she celebrated New Year's Eve at a party. A coroner is now awaiting toxicology tests to establish how the 33-year-old cover girl died at her Hollywood mansion. See, those words tell us everything. She had everything. She was beautiful, a model, wealthy. She lived in Hollywood. She had years ahead of her, or so we thought, 33 years old. Do you think she thought before she went out to party on New Year's Eve? Do you think she thought about death? I doubt it. It's probably the last thing on her mind. But before the day was out, she was in the presence of her Maker. We think it's never going to happen to us. Or we think it's years and years away. But here's the question this morning. If you were in Katia Sassoon's shoes, suddenly plunged into eternity, would you be sure of being in paradise? Do you have the answer to the great problem of death? See, it seems there is no answer at all. Medical science can't sort it out. It seems death is king. It always has the last word. Death comes to us all. That's why thinking about it is so mortifying. We've got no answers to it. Of course we play peekaboo with death, closing our eyes and pretending it can't see us. Of course we do that, because simply facing up to it is too terrifying. Unless we meet Jesus Christ. You see, Jesus does have an answer, the answer to mankind's greatest enemy. That's what this promise is all about here in verse 43. Today you'll be with me in paradise. And knowing this all depends on how we've reacted to Jesus Christ himself. That's the big issue. There are only two responses. It's no coincidence that two men were crucified with Jesus on that day. These two men represent the two responses we can make to him. Now, there's the response of the first man crucified with Jesus. We see it in verse 39. Do you see it there? One of the criminals, the first criminal that we're going to look at, one of the criminals who hung there, hurled insults at Jesus. "Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us." Now, at first glance, as we look at that verse, we may think we have nothing in common with a criminal dying for his crime. We may not have hurled verbal insults at Jesus Christ, although plenty do, blaming him for all the evil in the world, only ever using his name as an expletive. But whether that's us or not, we have all treated Jesus Christ as if he were our servant, as this man did. You see, "Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us." I wonder if you've ever prayed when you've been in real difficulty. In the normal run of things, never giving Jesus a second thought, never giving him the time of day. But when we're in trouble, expecting him to be at our beck and call. "Save me now, Jesus." That's what he's doing, isn't it? And we treat Jesus as our servant, not giving him his rightful place at the centre of our lives, as we heard Liz say earlier as she was explaining her story, not treating him as Lord, as boss, but as our servant. "You do for me what I want you to do." That's what this first man did. Now, to a greater or lesser extent, each one of us here treats Jesus Christ that way, running our lives our way, largely ignoring him. That's why we really need to worry about death. Because at death, we will stand before Jesus Christ as judge. And that, he says, is a fate worse than death. Indeed, Jesus warned those who followed him about that fate. One of the toughest parts of my job is meeting the bereaved, usually to take the funeral of their loved one. It is a privilege too, I must say, being able at least to try and help people through such a painful time. Not a part of the job that I hate, but it is one of the toughest parts. Usually as I get to speak to the widow or the widower or whoever it is, the next of kin, they begin to ask me some questions. They long to know where their loved one is. The very separation that they're going through is painful enough. They long to know that their loved one is at least at peace. What happens after death is a big question. And Jesus warns those who follow him that there is a fate worse than death. If we haven't got this sorted out, we don't want to be there. Look back to how this crucifixion scene began. Verse 26, the beginning of our reading earlier on. "As they led Jesus away, they seized Simon from Cyrene, who was on his way in from the country, and put the cross on him and made him carry it behind Jesus." Verse 27, "A large number of people followed Jesus, including women, who mourned and wailed for him." You see, Jesus' death penalty on that day caused quite a stir. There was quite a crowd following the proceedings that day, and is it any wonder? Many had witnessed the outstanding life that Jesus had lived. No wonder they were mourning his death. But as they mourned, Jesus turned to them and said, and this is very striking in verse 28, Jesus turned to them and said, "Daughters of Jerusalem, don't weep for me. Weep for yourselves and for your children." Jesus is going to go on to say, there's something much worse than what I'm going through. I'm going to die, but there's a worse judgment to come. Weep for yourselves. For, verse 29, "The time will come when you will say, 'Blessed are the barren women, the wombs that never bore and the breasts that never nursed.' Then they will say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and to the hills, 'Cover us.'" You see what Jesus is saying? There could be a time, there will be a time, when some will cry out for a mountain to fall on them, to crush them. Fancy being in a situation where you'd rather die being crushed by a mountain than live. Jesus warns those who will listen, there's a fate worse than death. For he says, and he uses these strange words, verse 31, if men do these things when the tree is green, what will happen when it's dry? I think what Jesus is saying there is, if this is what people can do to Jesus when he's lived such a good life, what will happen to them when they've killed him? What will happen to them after his death and after their death? What will happen to those who reject Jesus Christ? And that's exactly what we're all guilty of. Like the first criminal crucified with Jesus, we treat Jesus as our servant. We maybe sneer at him, mock him, insult him. Maybe we don't. Maybe we just ignore him. Then when we die, we will face him as our judge, and that will be a fate worse than death. Jesus says it will be better then on that day for mountains to fall on us and crush us than to be on the receiving end of his judgment. But that's not what Jesus wants for us. Jesus wants to save us, to rescue us from that. That's why he died that day. And that's the thing that most people don't understand. Why did Jesus have to die? Teenagers can be the most obnoxious characters on earth, can't they? I know we can all be obnoxious. I was a horrible teenager. A real sort of know-it-all. I remember one Good Friday when we were sitting around having lunch. Here I was, spotty teenager, suddenly thought that I'd come up with a question that no one had ever thought of before. So what's good about Good Friday? I snarled across the dinner table. Jesus died, didn't he? What's good about that? I said. Well, that's the big issue, isn't it? It's the thing that the majority failed to understand. It's the thing that the majority at the scene of Jesus' execution failed to understand. Everyone was asking, why doesn't he save himself? See, look at verse 35. The people stood watching and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, he saved others. Let him save himself if he's the Christ of God, the chosen one. Look at verse 36. The soldiers came up and mocked him. They offered him wine vinegar and they said, if you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. Look at verse 39. One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. Aren't you the Christ? Save yourself and us. You see, why doesn't he save himself? Why does he have to die? Well, of course, it was a comment of derision. The fact that he doesn't save himself just proves that he's not the Christ, the chosen one, the king. Well, of course, that is exactly where they were all wrong. Jesus was dying to save others. If he'd saved himself, he would not have rescued us from the clutches of death and the anger of God. Here's a story from a few years ago that somebody sent me. The title is Boy Drowns Saving His Father. Let me read the opening paragraph. A teenager who drowned with his young brother on their first family fishing trip sacrificed his own life to save his father, it emerged last night. Paul Seister, 18, pushed a life jacket to Father Stephen after their cabin cruiser capsized, telling him, don't worry, I'll swim to the shore. Later on, his father says this, he saved my life, he gave me the life jacket. You see, that is just a very little illustration of what Jesus Christ was doing when he died on the cross. It's as if he gave us the life jacket and he drowned himself. He said, I'll die so that you can go free. I'll take the punishment that you deserve. I love you that much. Do you know anyone who loves you that much? Or you may know someone who's prepared to die for you, as this father knew of his son. It may be your husband or your wife or your mother or father. But do you know anyone who loves you so much that they'd be prepared to die for you, even though you've ignored them, insulted them, treated them as your servant day after day after day? That's how much Jesus Christ loves you and me. You see, someone has to pay for our rebelling against Jesus. We can pay ourselves, we can take the full force of Jesus Christ's punishment for us, and if that's what we do, then on that day we'll say, I wish the mountains would fall on me. Or we can let Jesus pay. That's why Jesus didn't save himself, so that he could save others. That's why it's Good Friday. And that's what the second criminal understood. Look at these astonishing words as this man died. Verse 40. The other criminal rebuked the first criminal. Don't you fear God, he said, since you're under the same sentence? We're punished justly, for we're getting what our deeds deserve. But this man has done nothing wrong. Then he said, Jesus, remember me when you come in your kingdom. This man knew that he was guilty, verse 41. We're getting what our deeds deserve. And it's crucial for us to grasp if we're to know the promise of paradise. We deserve Jesus' punishment, not his forgiveness. This man knew that Jesus was innocent. Again, verse 41. This man has done nothing, he said of Jesus. That's why he could die for us, you see. More than that, he knew that Jesus was the king, verse 42. Jesus, remember me when you come in your kingdom. Isn't that amazing insight? Jesus never looked less like a king than he did at this moment, dying on a cross. He looked so weak. Yet this criminal recognized he is king, the king over death, who is exercising his power over death, taking the punishment that our sins deserve. And this criminal knew that King Jesus would defeat death. Again, verse 42, Jesus, remember me when you come in your kingdom. He knew that death was not the end for Jesus. Again, that is an amazing insight. How did he know? Well, maybe he heard about the amazing miracles of Jesus, the miracles that he'd already performed that showed that he had power over death. Do keep your finger in Luke 23. We're going to go back in a moment, but just flip back with me a few pages to Luke chapter 7. And we'll see one of those amazing miracles that Jesus did to show that he had power over death. Page 1035, 1035, Luke chapter 7. It is the amazing occasion when Jesus stumbles across a funeral. The boy is in the box already. Luke chapter 7, verse 11. Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, "Don't cry." Then he went up and touched the coffin, and those carrying it stood still. He said, "Young man, I say to you, get up." The dead man sat up and began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. They were all filled with awe and praised God. "A great prophet has appeared among us," they said. "God has come to help his people." This news spread throughout the Judea and the surrounding country. Well, I bet it did. Or maybe the criminal heard about that, you see. Or maybe the criminal had heard what Luke writes in chapter 8 about a little girl that Jesus took by the hand. She was already dead. They were already mourning her. And Jesus took her by the hand and said, "Get up." Almost as if she'd only been asleep, because that's what death is like to Jesus. It's just like sleep. He can wake anyone from it. Yeah, Jesus had already demonstrated his power over death. And so as we go back to Luke chapter 23, maybe this criminal had great confidence that death could be defeated by Jesus because he'd heard about those stories. He certainly now had confidence that Jesus himself could defeat death himself. Verse 42. Of Luke 23, Jesus, remember me when you come in your kingdom. We're in an even better position than this thief on the cross. We know that Jesus did rise from the dead. Well, these words in verses 41 and 42 are quite extraordinary. The criminal acknowledged his guilt. He knew that Jesus was innocent. He recognized that Jesus is king, and he knew that King Jesus would defeat death. And that's why Jesus said, verse 43, "I tell you the truth, today you'll be with me in paradise." Do you see, as we look at these two criminals, at death, everything depends on how we've reacted to Jesus. So how do you treat him? Do you treat him as your servant? You know, never giving him the time of day, but just calling on him from time to time. Or do you acknowledge him as king, as Lord, as Liz was talking about earlier, as boss, the one who we want to put our life under? This man was given a promise of eternal life with Jesus Christ. Not because he was a good man, he wasn't. He was a common criminal, a thief. He was given this promise because he recognized his guilt and he turned to the only one who could rescue him from a fate worse than death, King Jesus. I often ask people, "Are you ready to meet your Maker?" That's what I'm asking this morning. More often than not, people say to me, "Well, I hope so. Well, I hope so." Well, I hope so is not definite enough, is it? You can't have eternity hanging on, "I hope so." We want you to be able to say, with hundreds of others of us here, we want you to be able to say, I know so. With the thief on the cross, to say, I know that today I will be with Jesus in paradise. Will you join us in being sure of that? Rico has already mentioned to us the great course that we have here, Christianity Explored. It is a terrific way of thinking about these things. We'd love it if you'd fill in the little slip on the back of the service order. Pop it in the red box. Just say, yeah, I'd like to know some more about Christianity Explored. It starts on Wednesday evening, the 23rd of January, a week on Wednesday. It will be a great opportunity to ask any questions, to investigate these things. Is Jesus really king? Is he king over death? Does he have power over death? Can I put my life in his hands? Is he able to forgive me all my past, that I have a great future ahead? Great chance to ask any questions. Complete the slip, pop it in the red box. There'll be no pressure. We'll tell you when it's starting. We'll give you all the details. We love it if you come and think about these things. It has transformed many, many, many of our lives here. We'd love it if you'd join us.